Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Justice League has a new trailer, Spider-Man Homecoming has a new trailer, and Beats One is the biggest radio station in the world. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Long ago, when the player from the point didn't have no flow, a nigga hit me from a tennis shoe.
Welcome to the Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. This is, Big Boy from Outkast.
Oh, yeah.
From AT Aliens.
That's right.
Followed up by Andre 3000 on the Wheels of Steel. It's a good one. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Keely Shine.
Yes, sir. How Keely Shine's in the building today. Good. I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
I'm great. That's a good track that you pulled out of the crates.
Hey, man. Cast, bro.
From.
It's classic.
1990.
That's like a 90. I would say it's maybe 99.
99, right?
Yeah. That's right. 96. Okay.
Oh, God. That would feel old. Thanks, Marissa.
Thanks.
Other thing is.
That's 90s. I was still in high school. Yeah.
Outkast, this shit never sounds old or dated.
Not at all, man. Because it's music. It's real music. It's like, not like, you know, it's live instrumentation up in there.
That track is 20 years old, and it 21 like years
it's,
old.
It's ready right now.
It's ready right now.
Absolutely.
That is incredible. There's very few artists around you can say that. I mean, Tribe's kind of one of the, even Tribe stuff sounds, you know, first two albums sound a little dated. They're great. They sound classic. That doesn't sound classic. That just sounds like it's ready.
Yeah, it sounds like it's for this time. It's timeless.
Wow, that's really amazing. Anyway, welcome to Geek Nerd Tech. Lots to talk about today. We're going to talk about and get into some of the stuff that the government's doing right now, as always. Some new technologies coming out. New trailers have hit the scene. But first, we'll talk about our boy Barry Jenkins as well. But I want to talk about this story that the White House is where am I? I got lost here. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah, the White House. Excuse me. I'm all over the place. Let's start with Barry Jenkins. How about that? I'm going to start with Barry Jenkins. Barry Jenkins is going to direct the Underground Railroad series at Amazon, which I think is fantastic. Barry Jenkins, obviously the Academy Award winning director from Moonlight.
Yep.
You know, his screenplay won, his film won. Lots to be said about him. It's only his third film. Very amazingly, he is not going to go to the film route. Most times you win an Academy Award, you get your chance to make your big movie, you make the big $100 million joint, you make the whole big thing. But his time, he's going to arguably to television to do a TV series based on the Colson Whitehead Underground Railroad book.
Yeah.
What do you think of this? I mean, I got my thoughts on it, but what do you think of this?
I mean, I think it's good. I mean, I think he definitely is leveraging his I mean, the fact that he's won, you know, Academy Award for Moonlight to his advantage. And I think that, you know, yeah, pivoting to do television, I think, is a good move. I think he's obviously going to do other films in conjunction with this. But I think, you know, to get some of that streaming platform money, I think, is a great thing for him. And also, it helps to diversify the portfolio that Amazon has in giving some content that is historical, you know, autobiographical, and pertinent, relevant. So I liked his strategy in doing that. I like to see him be able to do an historical piece.
Yeah.
Just see what his aesthetics will be and his interpretation of that will be. But I applaud him. I think he's a great director. And I look forward to seeing what he's going to do, not only with this property, but also his subsequent film. So
right.
I applaud the dude.
I applaud too. And I can't remember. I think if, I can't remember. Like, I think the whole idea of the Underground Railroad is not dissimilar to the other Amazon show, which is Man in the High Castle, where it sort of slightly reimagines history a bit. And this is just reimagines a big what if on the Underground Railroad. It being an actual train system, being an actual underground railroad, and how that would work. Yeah, so it's sort of like I don't want to call it science fiction because it's not science fiction.
Some type of fantastical merged with his histories, which is
very much like Man in the High Castle. What if we lost World War II? Kind of taking that historical premise and going from there. It's very similar to that. But I will say it's great because he's got you mentioned Amazon streaming money, which is fantastic. I think that what's cool about this is you know, the Amazon stream money, we talk about guys going to go get the big $100 million movie, the big $100 million paycheck. This is probably going to be a $100 million series. Yeah, so he's
easily.
He's getting, you know, he's getting that money. So, and he's getting the opportunity to shepherd a huge thing. And arguably, you know, you take that book, some people could take the book and say, I'm going to make it a feature film.
Yeah.
But he decided, I'm going to take this book and make it a series.
Yeah, I mean,
so he had his choice.
I think with that strategy, I mean, obviously he's thinking about, you know, a bigger payout. More money, more screen time.
Multiple seasons.
Yeah, multiple seasons, more sophistication. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, who knows what that deal is going to look like.
Yeah.
You know, that might be $200 million. Who knows?
Yeah, and so it's interesting. And also creatively, it's not just about the finances. Creatively, you're able to do a lot more and explore a lot more character development than in its over length of a series than you are in a short 90 minutes or 2 hours. So
there's more real estate to be able to explore.
Yeah. So good for Barry. You know, how do you feel about his creative prowess and his ability to be able to pull something that large off, given the fact that he's from the indie world?
I don't think that really makes a difference. You know, I think that when you talk about, you know, large scale projects, I think it's more so how you handle it on the admin side, on the budget side, how you're spending the money,
right.
Make sure that, you know, you're not squandering the investor's money. But I think creatively, I think he'll be fine. Like, I think it's just managing such a large property and be able to have the foresight and the vision to be able to have all these things working in concert effectively. And I think that he has the experience to do it, you know, as an indie director, as a filmmaker. I have no qualms about him being able to execute this at the highest level. So
right, good. Me neither. I mean, all these guys are all going to come from the indie world and have their big shot, including Jon Favreau.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what happens.
That's right.
Good for him. Okay, next up, I want to talk about this ban on laptops and iPads and all electronic things and coming out of these Muslim countries. I mean, it's a real thing. Bless you over there. Bless you again. It's a real thing, like, you know, not being able to, after there was a talk of someone trying to sneak explosives in an iPhone battery or laptop battery, trying to sneak explosives in, coming out of one of these countries, I can't remember which one. So there was a ban on some countries, and now people say that they may be extended to all flights. Because there's a whole new version of new terrorist tactics that are coming out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what do you think of that?
You think that, you know, we live in a saturated environment where we're obviously connected to our phones, tablets, and laptops. And so if you have the ability and you have the sinister plans to be able to incorporate some bomb-making elements into that, like, that saturation and that possibility of something happening on a plane is all the greater, you know? And so
right.
I think maybe taking, you know, a second to relook at that might be helpful, because I think terrorists and people that are out to do evil can figure out, you know, very inventive ways to be able to kind of leverage the technology to be able to do destructive things. And so maybe, like I said, you know, deconstructing it a bit and seeing how maybe we can figure out a better way to be able to manage how we travel with our tech and be able to do it in a way that, you know, ensures the safety of not just, you know, ourselves, but also the safety of, you know, the planes, the flights, and the airline companies. So,
right.
I don't think that it's a problem. You know, I think that it'll be okay. I think that, you know, there'll be laws put in place that'll help, you know, maybe make it a more seamless process.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely sort of a scary proposition. I feel like, you know, I was wondered about that. I mean, there's what we're able to do with those sort of 3D printed plastic guns and plastic pieces, and there's a lot of things people are able to do to get some stuff. But when you talk about electronics, I mean, you know, even our phones, our laptops especially, our iPads, I mean, those are, you know, they got batteries in there. Batteries can be doubled for explosives, so I'm all for it.
Yeah, man.
Definitely not trying to have that stuff. We talk about Facebook. Like, you know, we talked about thousand stories about Facebook and Snapchat, Facebook almost buying Snapchat, Facebook trying to buy Snapchat, and then now just going and going all out war to compete against Snapchat.
Yeah.
Obviously, Instagram stories and some other things. Now, they're doing this whole thing called Facebook stories.
That's right.
Which is like, that's like, take this, you know, Snapchat. People who, they're taking those already you know, again, Facebook is Facebook because of its user base. So they've already got the existing user base, and then so what they have to do is if they can innovate with that user base to create some of these other to compete with some of these other new things out there, they could kill everybody in theory. It's just if people catch on to it. What do you think?
I think they are killing everybody. I don't think it's theoretical. I think it's practical. I think they've done a great job to kind of like let people fall on their own sort. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. You know, we look at Vine and how Instagram came and killed them off. And same thing with Snapchat. I think Facebook is doing, you know, an exceptional job and has done an exceptional job at doing that. All the way from, you know, coming up with ways to go after eBay and go after LinkedIn and go after all the big tech companies that are innovating in a particular space. Facebook saying, hey, you know, we are the jack of all trades, but we're the master of integration. Like, no one can do it better than us. We'll integrate all these things and kill you all off. We have the user base. We have the money. We have the leverage. We have the relationships. We have the bandwidth to do it. And I think that, I mean, it is kind of like a war. You know, I don't think that Snapchat, you know, I don't know if they could battle against a titan like Facebook, you know?
I mean, not the user base. We're talking about, 1.6 billion users per day.
Right.
Like, that is, I mean, Snapchat's not doing that.
Yeah.
So, like, you talk about 1.6 billion users a day. That's a lot of folks. And so, no, it's only to grow. And then they can also, like you said, they can build upon what Snapchat's done with also augmented reality stuff and come up with some really sort of cool things in there. You know, I don't know, man. I think that could be very, very problematic for Snapchat.
I just think it's interesting how a company, you know, hey, you know, we like to purchase you. We like to acquire you. You know, right. Company says, nah, we're good. We're going to hold off. We're going to make more money. Right. And then Facebook, you know, says, you know what? Well, great job, Snapchat. You know, we're going to do what you do, but much better.
Right.
And then, you know, see what happens. I think that model, that business model, is crazy. Like,
yeah,
to be able to have like the backing and the confidence to be able to say, okay, cool, you don't want to take the deal, all right, well, we'll just be patient,
we'll just lay in the cut till we figure it out,
and then we're gonna smash you off,
right? Like, because we can. So it's almost like it's so like gangster in that
it
way.
Is
it's almost like you want the 3 billion, you want the 10 billion, okay, all okay, right. We'll just lay in the
no
cut.
Billion
now you're done,
right?
No billion. Your company's over,
man.
So yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, we know how much you love Facebook, so
oh yeah, I'm all over Facebook. So I don't know. I won't be using it. I wonder though, it makes me wonder about, you know, it's funny you say that, it makes me wonder about what is the thing that would make me come over to Facebook? Like, is there anything that will pull me into Facebook? Like, oh, Facebook's
you're
back.
You're tripping, man.
Like, you know, I don't know if there is.
How about you just hop on there? How about just hop on there and just see what the offering is?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm over it. Speaking of which, I want to talk about our friends over at DraftKings. DraftKings is back. I mean, man, it seems like it was... It was just a second ago, we're ending football season, but we're right in the middle of the NC tournament. We're in the golfing. We have the tournament. All these things are happening. So golf is a big way that we can do this. You know, the first major golf tournament of 2017 is next week. The celebrate DraftKings.com is hoping a free fantasy golf contest with $100,000 in total prizes up for grabs. Whether you live and breathe golf or you're looking to try a new fantasy sport, now that football's over, the once-a-week fantasy golf at DraftKings is for you. Fantasy golf at DraftKings is easy to play. Just pick 6 golfers before the tournament tees off on next Thursday. Sit back and watch the action live. You rack up points for streaks, per hole performance, tournament finishes, and more. Outscore the competition and win. You get closer and closer to the action just like this. Millions of fantasy sports fans play this just like you have experienced this. The excitement of DraftKings is here. It's your turn now. Check this out. The next tournament starts next Thursday. So head to DraftKings.com now. That's DraftKings.com. Receive a free entry for $100,000 contest. All you gotta do is use the promo code Geek as a Geek
right.
Near Tech. Geek for your share is $100,000 in total prizes only at DraftKings.com, the destination for fantasy sports.
Promo
check it out.
Code Geek.
Promo code
Let's get
Geek,
it.
As in Geek Nerd Tech. I never thought I would watch golf with a view to want to try to win some money, but now.
Hey, man, I'm trying to win some money, whatever I'm watching.
DraftKings got it.
Let's go.
So we had a big thing here a while back when we had the San Bernardino tax, and I think it was San Bernardino, and Apple the government wanted to sort of get Apple to sort of decrypt their phones so they can get some information. Was that San Bernardino? Was
yeah, San Bernardino terror shootings.
Yeah, and so the UK government is saying that they're not having that from Apple. Like they said they can't get away with unbreakable encryption following a terrorist attack. The UK is very much like saying, in a statement, they're like, it's completely unacceptable. There should be no place for terrorists to hide. We need to make sure that organizations like WhatsApp and Apple, there are plenty of others that don't provide a secret place for terrorists to communicate with each other. So, yeah, I mean, they're really, really, the UK government's all over this. And you know, I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I think that, you know, these type of apps and obviously, you know, the phone, it's all, you always talk about privacy versus protection. And so I think that it's a fine line. You know, we talked about it. We've explored this topic for a number of years, actually. And yeah. I think it's difficult because, you know, you want to, you know, ensure the rights of the people that are using the product and, you know, the information that they're disseminating and holding. You want to ensure those rights, but also you want to ensure that people are protected and safe. And I think that, you know, terrorists being able to leverage these technologies and be able to communicate in ways where it's self-destruct or a way where it's encrypted, where, you know, government agencies cannot take a peek inside. I think we have to figure out a way or set up some legalities where, you know, it gives them the first right to be able to at least, you know, have, if there is an incident, to be able to look into it and investigate it further. And right. So, I mean, I think, like, we've always argued that it's a slippery slope. When do you give this right? When do you not give the right? When is it appropriate? When is it not appropriate? Like, I don't know, man. I feel like I think it's a case by case situation, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you create a law, a general law, to protect either way. You know,
it is very tricky. It is a very slippery slope. It is very it's interesting. I don't know the answer, and I definitely don't know that you can do it per country. It's like, well, the U.S. no, but in the U.K. yes. You know, it's hard to say. But I mean, the proliferation of sort of terrorist attacks in the U.K. seem to be definitely higher than they have been in the U.S. We haven't had a major U.S. terrorist attack on our soil in a long time. After a major one since 9/11. So, I don't know, man. I don't know the answer, but it's not just Apple. It's WhatsApp as well and yeah. Other companies. So, I mean, we'll see. We will see. Wells Fargo, the bank that I bank with, is about to introduce cardless Apple Pay ATM withdrawals. Now, I have Apple Pay on my phone. I use it all the time. I use Apple Pay all the time with my linked to a lot of my devices, a lot of my apps like Uber and other stuff, and I buy stuff all the time through Apple Pay. It's no big deal. I kind of love the idea of just being able to walk up to the ATM and just being like, and have it and keeping it moving. The question is, oh, there's no question because it only works with your fingerprint, so not like someone can just take your phone and go get money out.
Right.
I kind of like this. I'm into it. I think Bank of America's going to probably do the same thing. But I know that you've been anti kind of all this stuff, but what do you think about this?
I mean, I'm not anti, you know, being able to pay with your phone. I'm just anti, you know, I wouldn't even say that I'm anti. I'm just concerned that, you know, if I put my fingerprint information into my phone, that it's protected. Same thing we were just talking about last topic. You know, is that information going to be used through government agencies without my knowing?
Right.
Like, so that's a concern. But I think in terms of the technological aspect of it, I think it's great. Like, we want to make it as efficient and convenient as possible when we are shopping or we're trying to get access to our finances. And I think that, you know, being able to walk up to an ATM and I have to pull out my wallet, then card, then type in, you know, my PIN code and then get the money. Like, all those steps, you know, I've kind of been centralized down, funneled down to like one, pull out my phone and boom, I'm out. Got my cash and I'm done.
Yep.
So I love that. I think that's fresh. But however, like, I really don't use cash often anyway. So I don't really see, I mean, I see the usefulness of it, but I don't see it as like a big thing for my life personally. Like,
yeah. No. I mean, you'll see more. I think you'll see like I've seen New York cabs have a lot of the Apple Pay things already, a lot of point of purchase.
The NFC technology.
Yeah. Now going to that, I wonder if we begin to see individuals like Square. I think the next move would be like if you're an individual, like if you want to receive a tip, if you're a valet or if you're something like that. So something, think of a place where you use a cash economy. Could you be able to just be like, broop?
Yeah, you know, like, you know. Some like even like kind of like how you airdrop, you know, with Max, right. Like I airdrop a document to you.
Right.
I could just airdrop you $10 or I could airdrop a payment or whatever. Sure. I would love that. That would be fresh.
That'd be interesting. I wonder how safe and unhackable that is. But I like the idea of that because cash is, you know, it's tough to be carrying around cash, but we'll,
it's tough. Yeah. It's not tough to be carrying around cash.
When you got stack, when you got big stacks like I do. Right. Exactly. It's hard to carry these big knots.
I hear you.
Okay. So we'll see this. But I love this idea. I can't wait. I got a question for you. So Apple Music execs now say that Beats One Radio is the biggest radio station in the world. I've been a big, huge proponent of Beats One, a big, huge proponent of Apple Music. I know that we've been talking about this for a long time, which is going to survive Spotify versus Apple Music versus Tidal. I think we're going to both agree Tidal is kind of like fading out, although they're still battling hard. They're still coming out with stuff. They're claiming they got stuff to drop. But when you have... So anyway, two questions. First of all, what do you think of Apple Music? Apple Music is still dominating. Are you still on Apple Music and Beats One Radio?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, out of all the music streaming platforms, Apple Music is my, you know, choice. It's always been my choice. I had Spotify, you know, before there were really a diverse option. But I love the interface of Apple Music. I love the sociability. I love how you can, you know, interact with different forms of content aside from just music, the interviews and different, you know, movies. And obviously they're building content on the platform, video content on the platform. So I love all those things. And I love the fact that it integrates with my desktop, my laptop, and all of my other Apple devices. So I think that in the grand scheme of things, when you juxtapose it to the other streaming platforms, I think, again, they have the dough, they have the money, they have the star power, and they have not only do they have the software, they have the hardware. So all those things working together, the orchestration of all those things, I love it. And I think that the price point is fine. And I think the personality as it relates to the radio side of it, I think they're on point, you know? Yeah. And I think in the course of history, I think Spotify is kind of like in the race still, but I think Apple is pulling ahead. You know? Yeah.
Well, it's interesting about so Spotify. So this is other question I'm gonna ask you about this because this is fascinating to me. So Drake's album dropped last week, right? So Spotify has a larger user base than Apple Music, a much larger user base, but
not paid.
That's a good point.
But that's okay.
Excellent point. Yeah. Excellent point. But okay, but let's just say for argument's sake,
do have a larger paid user base than Apple, but not as great. Okay. Not as great.
So Spotify has a larger user base than Apple. Apple and Spotify both dropped Drake's album.
Mm-hmm.
Drake's album streamed on Apple Music 89.9 million times. 90 million times in the first 24 hours.
That's right.
Million times in the first day is when is how much this thing streamed. It bested Spotify by 30 million.
Yeah.
And Spotify has a larger user base, right. But Apple, with a smaller user base, 30 million more people streamed it on Apple. What do you attribute this to?
Well, I think to my point, that a lot of the subscribers on Spotify aren't paid and you don't necessarily have access to all the content. So maybe that could be a part of it. Like, because I'm not a paid subscriber, I don't get the full album.
Right.
And then I think, you know, maybe it's the diversity of the consumer base. Maybe, you know, on Spotify there's more people that listen to a particular type of music other than what is on Apple Music. And then also I think that because Drake is a direct partner with Apple, obviously they're gonna push him forward a little bit more and give him more marketing, more visibility. Obviously that's gonna raise the numbers, so I think that has a lot to do with it too.
Yeah, because he's like, if you open the screen up, there's Drake's face, you know, or Drake's dad's face or whatever. I mean, you know,
and you gotta think too, Drake was on a product launch I think it was 2 years ago.
Yep.
When I don't know who they brought out, but I know Drake was a part of all that. It was Drake and I think what's my man? The Weeknd. I think both of them were a part of it.
Drake's got the Apple.
Exactly. Apple. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, you know, that has a big part of it. You know,
right.
The fact that he's kind of like a franchise player, essentially. So, of course, his numbers are going to spike.
300 million streams in the first week.
Hey, let's get that money, brother.
I mean, that's for the entire album, which is incredible when you think about, like, you know, purchasing an album or what platinum used to be, right. A million copies, right. You know. So, I mean, you can't really quantify buying a million albums versus listening to the album 300 million times.
Absolutely.
But that's still got to be pretty crazy, though.
That's out of control.
I mean, like, you have to figure, like, back in the old days, if a million people bought your album, you're still not getting 300 million listens.
Well, I don't know about that. That just means
the first week.
That just means I listen. That means every person listens to the album maybe 3 or 4, 30 times or whatever. Maybe that's they listen true. To it 30 times.
So I probably listened to it already like at least 15.
Exactly. To 30 times back in the myself. Day, you would listen to the album on repeat, because that's all you had.
That's
so,
right. That's a good point. I mean, okay, that's a good point. Last question with this is which I find very interesting, is what does this mean for our boy Jay-Z? What do you think Jay-Z is going to like? I mean, like, so obviously, you know, Lemonade did well for Tidal, and you know, Pablo didn't do as well for Tidal as they hoped, but it still did well in his classic album in terms of things. Drake is Drake, 90 million in the first day. Whenever Jay-Z's joint drops, and it's coming any second, it'll be like, we'll just wake up, it'll be on an inbox or something like that. It'll just drop secretly. What do you think he's going to do? Do you think he can catch Drake? And if not, what does this mean for Jay-Z?
I don't think Jay-Z is concerned, number one. I think
I'm more concerned than Jay-Z.
Yeah. I think Jay-Z has bigger fish to fry, and he has right. his eye on a different prize. But in terms of his music, him as an artist dropping, I think, you know, I think he's in the twilight years of his musical career, even right. though he's still dope.
Right.
But I don't think it's a juxtaposition between Drake and Jay-Z on right. numbers. I think, you know, like Jay-Z owns the building. Yeah. Okay, Drake doesn't own the building, that's so true. It's no comparison.
Yeah, Drake's a player; he's an owner.
Exactly.
It's like that old Chris Rock joke about, you know, Shaq's not rich. The Goose Sounds track, Shaq's check is rich.
Yeah.
that's Jay-Z.
Yeah.
So so I guess that's
like I'm cutting the check to myself.
Right. Exactly. So that's I mean, Drake's still got to collect the check from Tim Cook.
Right.
You know, so. I mean, that's good, but I'm not mad at either of these guys, and it's just very interesting to see, you know, how this plays out. Yeah, man, wow, these numbers are staggering, very, very staggering. I want to move on to some, just a couple more things, a couple small, fun things as it relates to things. Have you checked out, have you seen the new Justice League trailer?
I have, man.
What do you think? It's getting mixed reviews, but mostly exciting reviews. There's some people who are just really just hating on Zack Snyder, hating on the way it looks, hating on his aesthetic. Feels like it's another, you know, just Superman and Justice League. You know, can Zack Snyder Superman and Batman versus Superman? Can Zack Snyder pull this one off?
I think he can.
I was excited. What do you think?
I was excited. I think he can. I think it looked fresh to me. I didn't have those mixed review reactions and feelings. I think that, I mean, it looked dope. It made me want to, you know, hurry up and watch it. You
right.
know? So I think that, I mean, there is a point to be made in terms of the tonality and how, you know, he presents his films and the, you know, the aesthetic nature of them.
Washed out colors, the darkness.
I like the moody, dark, like.
Everything can't be the 300, though.
No, it can't. But I mean,
but that's his style.
That's his style, right. And either I mean, I think it works. I think it works for that property.
Yeah.
You know? So, we'll see.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like he really sort of invented that super slow mo grab motion, like, you know, and
we that's kind of played though.
It's played. Yeah. It's super played, but he kind of invented the 300. Like the 300, he invented it. He sort of went and perfected it a little bit in Watchmen.
Yep.
And then now to see it over and over again in Batman or Superman and this, and it's in the trailer. It's like happens 5 times in the trailer. It's like, all right
buddy. Develop some new
tricks. But it is kind of dope. And I don't know. The one thing that I did find interesting is the Suicide Squad had gotten into all this trouble with the studio because they, you know, David Ayer made this dark, amazing movie. And the studio liked it at first, but then they ran this trailer done by this one company, which had a bunch of needle drops in there, and it got people excited because of the music in the trailer and the way it was situated. And the trailer tested so high that the studio went back and recut the movie to make it more like the trailer. Yeah. So they had that dossier version.
Right.
So, thus ruining Suicide Squad, you know, in many people's opinion, and we'll never know if we'll see the full cut.
Right.
I mention this only to say that watching this new Justice League trailer, it's that same company that did the Suicide Squad thing. So it's a little, I don't need, you know, Jack White guitars and like 5 different needle drops throughout the whole trailer in order to get me excited about the movie. I'm already excited. I don't need like.
That's,
you know.
But that's their job. Their job in editing and producing that is to make you excited to the extreme.
Right.
And so to pull out the extracted the greatest DNA of the movie and present it to you. I mean, they're doing their job.
I mean, the Suicide Squad trailer, I would admit, was fantastic. It was different from what the movie was going to be,
right,
which is why it was a problem. This trailer, I don't know if it's different from the movie's going to be. Probably not, but I don't know.
Think about it. Like,
I feel manipulated in a way that I don't want to be.
Every trailer does a bit of manipulation. Look at Fences, right, how that was cut. Like, you thought that was going to be the most action-packed film ever.
Exactly.
Denzel about to whoop some ass. Yeah.
Exactly.
That movie was all dialogue. Like,
yeah. Good point. So, good point. And to that point, the other trailer that came out, which I'm also very excited about, is Spider-Man Homecoming. And I wanted to see if you had an opportunity to check that out.
Yeah, I did. I did, actually, and I think that trailer is fantastic.
That looks great, and my boy Michael Keaton looks dope.
Wow,
he's like, I'm talking about just as a villain.
Okay,
because we've been seeing a lot of like Michael Keaton, like he's just started his career as sort of funny guy, comedian, yeah. Mr. Funny. He's been doing a lot of, you know, he's been obviously some serious acting lately, but it's been a while. Since Pacific Heights, since we've seen Michael Keaton as the villain,
right.
And I mean, he's looking kind of. I mean, I'm feeling him, huh?
I
feel as a villain, because he can act. I'm like, I'm very concerned for my little Peter Parker in that one, but and Robert Downey Jr. is in this one, and yep. I'm very, very excited about this, because this being the third theatrical reboot of Spider-Man,
right?
The third Peter Parker we've seen in 10 years.
I'm really rooting for this, because I feel like this property, I mean, really all these properties are overly saturated, but I'm really rooting for this one, because I feel like if this one tanks, like, I'm kind of out on this franchise.
Sure. I mean, and unfortunately, Spider-Man's not going anywhere.
Right.
They'll try it again because it's Spider-Man.
Of course.
But, I mean, yeah. But, I really liked what my boy, I can't remember his name, Heartbreak Ridge.
Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, Hacksaw Ridge. Anyway, I can't.
I know he's talking. Yeah, I thought he was dope.
He's an amazing actor. Yeah. So, what's his name?
That's right.
Thank you very much, Marissa. But I love my boy Andrew Garfield's take. There's a certain generation of people that love what's the other dude's name, Marissa, first Spider-Man. There's a whole generation that loved the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Why did you play him?
The whole generation out there. Like, wait, Marissa, who's your favorite Spider-Man? Like, are you Tobey or are you Andrew?
I'm more Andrew.
Okay, yeah, and Andrew's is solid. So, Tom Holland's also a Brit, so we'll see what he does. We can't seem to get an American Spider-Man, but we'll see what happens.
Hey, man.
I'm not mad at
Black Spider-Man.
They almost had Corey Glover, Childish Gambino,
Donald
Glover. Thank you. They almost said Donald Glover, but they flipped it and made him black in the comic books instead. And then, of course, Donald Glover is now Lando Calrissian. So who cares? I think that's it. I skipped a couple stories, but I think we're doing good. Anything else you want to cover?
All right, man. Yeah, I'll throw this one at you. So. So we got a chance to check out, you know, all the Marvel iterations on Netflix, right?
Yep.
So Iron Fist, bad reviews. Have you seen it, and what do you think about
it? I'm 3 episodes in, and I don't hate it.
I'm about 2 in, and I don't hate it either. I'm trying to figure out why are the reviews so low.
I was having this conversation. It's like, I feel like it's 13. I may get to episode 8 and be like, ugh. I mean, there's plenty of time for it to go real bad.
Right.
But... I'm not mad at Danny Rand, the lead.
Like, I'm not mad at him either.
I'm not mad at who they chose to be. I can't remember her name, but the sidekick, the girl who's also
like
in the comics.
Chick?
Yeah.
All right.
So I wonder, you know. I'm not mad at it at all. There's a whole comic universe that has. I mean, there's a whole series that has. Obviously, there's Power Man and Iron Fist. You know, mm-hmm. Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
Yep.
But there's also a series that has. Oh God, Misty, the girl, the sister from Luke Cage, the cop.
Oh, the cop,
Misty. She's a character,
really.
Yeah, she's like a dope kind of Pam Grier type.
Oh, talking about in. Okay, I thought you were saying something else.
No,
of course.
No, but what I'm saying
as a sidekick character,
and then the Iron Fist sidekick, the girl, they have a series together.
Right.
So I wonder if they'll bring those two actually to do something together. Because I'd like to see that.
We'll
but
see.
I don't know. I'm not mad at it so far. We'll see. I haven't. You know, I don't know. We'll see.
From the first two, it seems pretty cool. Maybe it falls off, or maybe, you know, again, we talk about the saturation word. Maybe that's what it is. Just too much Marvel everywhere.
Right.
Maybe that has a lot to do with it. But I mean, I was reading like an article that kind of like gave an overview of the stats of each of those properties, and each one of them Daredevil, Luke Cage. What's my other one? The lady,
Jessica Jones.
All of those rated like in the 90s, right? 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. And this one's like I think 30 or 40%. Like, why is it so fucking low? And so I'm just I'm hoping to get through it and figure out why.
I just feel like it's there's a backlash that happened that is probably unfair because so far, I mean, it's plenty of time for it to go bad. But so far, it looks good. I mean, Daredevil Season 2 is also very good. I like Season 1. I think when it's all said and done, I like Season 1 better than Season 2 of Daredevil. But just because I like the gritty sort of story. I like the Kingpin storyline better. But we'll see. I'm definitely excited about the Defenders. Bringing them all together to make the Defenders
is a good move for that platform.
That's a good move. Absolutely. I do want to mention one story that I did skip that I want to go back to before we get out of here. I forgot. Your boy Elon Musk.
That is
Musk.
My boy. Trying to get that Musk money.
The Neuralink. It's a venture to merge the human brain with AI. Yeah. Putting a chip in the brain.
That's right.
Rockets, cars, and now brain chips. This can't be good.
It is good.
You want a chip in your brain?
Hey, man, what happens if you had Alzheimer's or if you had some type of some brain injury or you had some type of, you know, disability that would enable you to, you know, have your memories or have your language or, you know, have motor skills or whatever? You wouldn't want it? You just want to be sitting there in the vegetative state?
I mean,
God. Thank you. I know the answer.
What about the dude who's going to hack? I'm hacking Achilles' brain.
What's the movie with...
Have you, like, doing all kind of moves?
What's the movie with... what's the movie called? Dang, I forgot. Whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I think that Elon Musk is the perfect person to, you know, be investing in this category of science and technology. I think that, you know, he has theorized and forewarned for many years that we've reached transcendence with
Johnny Depp.
That's right.
Yes, good that job, movie. Marissa.
I think that I think that Elon Musk is the guy to do it. I think he's inventive. I think he has the balls to do it. He has the money to do it.
Sure.
He'll take risks. And I think that with anything with technology, there's a usefulness and there's a destructive element. So I think it's us finding the balance between the two. I mean, it's inevitable. It's inevitable. So we just have to adapt to it, just like we're adapting the, you know, driverless, self-driving cars, and we're going to adapt to drones and all right. The other things that are happening. So
I agree. What I do find interesting about this is Elon Musk is the main proponent against. He's the main guy who's with me in saying that AI takeover could be real. AI, there could be a trend, there could be a Skynet, there could be a Matrix. You know, we should beware of AI and getting them cracking like that. So the idea that he wants to merge AI with the human brain must be his need and want to sort of like make sure that we stay in control of the machines. That's what I'm theorizing.
Hey man, he wants to be the Magellan of his time. He wants to be the Neil Armstrong of his time. So I feel like if there's a category to explore and to say I'm the first to do it, he's the guy to do it, you know?
I mean, yeah, the chip in your brain and maybe download your whole consciousness and throw it a new body. Keep it moving. Who knows?
I got one last thing for you. I have not seen it. I've just been completely bogged down with work, but have you seen the Dave Chappelle joints?
Yes, I have actually.
All right, so giving any spoilers or if it even requires that, like what is your take? So I've heard a lot of mixed reviews. Some people like it, some people don't. Some people say it's not old Chappelle, it's a different Chappelle. What is your take?
I think Chappelle's a genius. And I feel like that it's not old Chappelle in that it's not going to be old Chappelle because Chappelle is 12 years older or 12, 13 years older, whatever it is. It feels that way.
His it's more mature, you mean?
It's more mature.
His thinking?
Yeah, but his style, the way he rolls now, he's doing like a Dick Gregory like style. Not necessarily in his humor, but in his presentation. He's very like this is interesting. I'm gonna comment on a couple things. The way he does his tours, the way like the stage is set up, the way he does his pre-roll in the movie, the way he comes to his logo with him smoking a cigarette, him coming out, like all of that is just the presentation is dope. And the way he kind of is able to sit there, do his thing, light a cigarette, is very Dick Gregory, man. He lights a cigarette, he'll sit down on the bench and just talk for a little bit, take a couple of drags, use the cigarette as a prop. And what Chappelle does better than almost anybody in the modern era is, this takes it back to Richard Pryor, even back to Lenny Bruce, is he's a storyteller. He'll just tell you a story, and the story might be literally 15 minutes long.
Right.
And throughout that story, there's like 1,000 laughs.
And gems.
And gems.
Right.
But it's literally, whether it's a real story or not. There's some comedians who are like, you know, punchline, set up, knockdown, set up, knockdown, kind of making up stuff. He's telling real stories, and I mean, Kevin Hart does this too, but it's in a different way because Kevin Hart's a little more fantastical and wild about it.
Yeah.
But Chappelle has this a really innate ability to just tell stories and be hilarious and still shock. And the thing about him too is these are written jokes. These are constructed jokes. Like he's working.
Yeah.
And he has the way he's able to make you come up there and make you feel like, I don't work on this shit. I'm just out here telling stories.
Like it is improv.
Yeah, right. Like it is improv. And guys like him and Rock like work so hard on these jokes.
And Kevin.
Over and over. And Kevin work on these jokes and try them out. Work them and work them and
make
work them.
Make them so natural.
Get them perfect. And by the time they get out there, and so from that standpoint, it's really great to watch. I will say
that's the genius of it all, you know?
Genius of it all. I will say I like the first one better than the second one.
Right.
And I don't know if that has to do with the fact that it's hard to watch two specials back to back. So,
well, one of them, if I'm not mistaken, was acquired, meaning that it was already shot before the Netflix deal happened.
I think they both were.
One of them I thought was original. Because one of them, I read that he even drops like a Netflix joke in there and says, hey, something about a Netflix show.
Yeah.
And that was the one before he did the Netflix deal.
Yeah.
And I thought one of the second one or the other one was like higher production value and, you know, more like the Netflix model or whatever.
I think that, so to answer that question, so the first one is one shot exactly a year ago at the Hollywood Palladium.
Right.
And it's high production value and it's a special shot for something. It's definitely shot for something. I don't know. He references Fife because Fife just died. Gary Shandling just died. So it's literally a year ago, a year ago this month. The other one before that was done in Austin, Texas.
I think that was the acquisition.
Yeah, and that's also a year ago.
That was a smaller one, right?
Yeah, actually, it's a larger venue.
Oh.
It's a stadium show, a larger venue, and it's shot like a comedy special, but it wasn't. It's just like a concert film.
Gotcha.
That one felt like a concert film. The Palladium one, obviously, you know, Dave Chappelle can sell out bigger venues than the Palladium,
of course.
It felt like this was a controlled environment.
Right.
And in terms of production value for you and I, production value was way higher on the Palladium one.
Right.
Controlled environment. Right. They were doing different cool things. The one in South by Southwest, or actually Austin City Limits, just felt like a concert film.
Yeah.
Which is fine. He used the same intro, Morgan Freeman intro on both of them, which was interesting.
Well, I get that. To make them uniformed.
They did it like, they dropped it like it's a couple of episodes.
Right.
And I think that at the end of the day, for me, I like the first one better than the second one. I think they're both very, very funny.
Are they classic?
Funny. I think the first one is got some classic moments.
Oh, no.
It's hard to say, like...
Is it a classic, yes or no?
Off the top of my head, no, it's not a classic.
Ooh.
But doesn't mean. But I don't. But
doesn't mean it's not good.
It doesn't mean. I think it's great. But it just feels like. It feels like he's on his way back. Like this, you can tell that he's been working. He's on his way back. This is a year ago. He's working out a year and a half before that. So a year and a half. So let's say 2014, 15. He's been working out to a special he shot in 2016, and he shot it and it was good. But it feels like I'm working my way back. He references Key and Peele doing his show and other stuff. And da da da.
And Kevin. He drops a Kevin.
He does a whole Kevin story, which is hilarious, right. By the way. But I think that I'm very interested to see what happens from 2016 to 2017.
Right.
I feel like he's going to be he's Dave Chappelle. So I think that leap from where he was in 16 to right now, and that Netflix deal happened in this calendar year.
Of course.
So I'm really interested to see the new shit that he drops.
That's what's up.
So because this, and maybe the last thing I'll say is maybe because I just know that these are stuff that they put it. It's from the vault.
Yeah,
that's how they put it. It's from Chappelle's vault. I think they both were from the vault.
Oh.
So maybe because it's from the vault, I feel like he's just putting this out there.
Hey.
You know, they're good, but this is real shit.
We'll see. I look forward to seeing it, and then we can have more dialogue about it.
Yeah.
But I've heard a
what
lot.
Have you
of,
heard? But have you heard classic? Or have you heard just okay?
I've heard a variation of critique. Some have said, "Nah, it was whack," which I was surprised to hear.
And nah, then
some
it's not whack,
right? And then some have said it's classic, and some have said it's not the same. You know, Dave Chappelle that we're used to, but it's a little different, more mature, more sophisticated, more I guess would say centered or more wise. Like
right.
He's like more. I guess he's trying to really. talk about a lot of social progressive things, and the tone of it is more serious.
It's also it's also like a, like look, he's Dave Chappelle. Like before back in the day when he's doing pre-Chappelle show stand up,
right?
He wasn't Dave Chappelle. He's just a stand up comic.
Right.
He's hilarious.
Right.
But not post Chappelle show Chappelle. Yeah. He's Dave Chappelle.
Right. Right.
And he
right.
references that like I'm Dave Chappelle.
Right.
Like, you know, so it's kind of interesting to see that, and he's rich. You know, like it, you know, it's a whole different thing. Lola was never really a huge Chappelle fan going in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, didn't really watch Chappelle's show, kind of whatever on his comedy. And you enjoyed it, right?
Yeah,
yeah, she really liked it.
Too. That's what's up.
Both? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
Yeah, so.
There it is, man. Well, I got some homework to do.
Yeah, right? I'm very interested to hear how you like it.
All right.
Like. Have you seen it, Marissa?
I have not, no.
Okay. Are you a Chappelle person? All right, then forget it, Dan. Forget you. I'm just kidding. All right, we can get out of here. That's good.
We out of here, baby. All right,
thank you very much. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE, and they can find you where?
On Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. Good to see you. We will be back next week with more stuff and definitely review Chappelle, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.